The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
The millions of fans of Detective Inspector John Rebus will have followed his ups and downs in a turbulent career through some 24 volumes, translated into many languages over the past 30 years. Rebus, of course, is retired, but happily for readers, he has not gone away. Although he's a bit crocked, he's given up the fags, although not yet the booze. The latest in the series is called A Heart Full of Headstones. The creator of John Rebus, Sir Ian Rankin, is with me in studio. Ian, good morning and welcome.
Thank you very much.
He's still around, but as I say, he's a bit crocked.
He's alive and kicking. He's got COPD. We used to call it emphysema. I like COPD because it has the word cop in it. So I decided that was what I would give him as a disability. So now he lives in a ground floor flat, not up two stories up in a tenement. Yeah, he's no longer a cop. He has had to give up the cigarettes, as you've rightly said. He has the occasional drink, but not as much as he used to. But he still feels like a detective to his very bones.
Yeah, and he can't resist following a lead as it is presented to him. Now, we'll talk about as much of the plot as you want to, but just you mentioned a tenement there, and I think another of your characters is also living in a tenement. Does tenement have a different meaning in Scotland than it would for us? Because I think of the teeming tenements of the late 19th, early 20th centuries, which would have been riddled with disease and all the rest of it.
Yeah, it's true. It is an issue because for a lot of people, they think, even Scots would think of tenements as being a Glasgow thing that got knocked down in the 60s because they were unsanitary and 20 families sharing one toilet and all the rest of it. No, tenements were sort of mostly built in Victorian times, and the ones in Edinburgh are four stories tall, lovely high ceilings, cornicing. You've got the shared stairwell, but the flats themselves are very well appointed and now quite expensive. So actually where Rebus lives now in Edinburgh, which Marchmont, which is where I was staying as a student when I wrote the first book, he probably couldn't have afforded that on a policeman's salary these days.
Realistically.
Yeah.
You see, I had this vision when you write that he lives in a tenement. I had, graffiti on the walls, syringes on the stairwells. Yeah.
Those who know Marchmont in Edinburgh would think, no, not here.
Not here. Genteel Edinburgh. Now, at the beginning of this book is all about a cop who's in trouble for basically domestic abuse.
Yeah. I mean, we all know that there have been lots of issues with policing everywhere. We've seen it in the States with Black Lives Matter. We've seen it in the UK, specifically in the Metropolitan Police. In fact, I read in the paper this morning about how the Metropolitan Police still has this endemic problem with sexism and racism.
And they're going to fire dozens of officers.
Yeah. And there's been certain big high-profile cases. I mean, the Sarah Everard case, where a woman was abducted and murdered by a serving police officer, would be the most noteworthy, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, it got me thinking, what kind of police do we get? What kind of policing are we getting? And what kind of policing do we want and do we need?
And that's a problem, because if you don't pay your cops well, there's a potential for, easy money through corruption.
Well, yeah, corruption is part of it. But also there's this thing about you get the wrong kind of people wanting to be the police. You get people who want to use their weight, as it were. You get people who perhaps are right wing. And think of taking the police towards a kind of fascistic state police rather than a sort of police that's for everybody, no matter what your abilities are.
And in the United States, that might be more pronounced than elsewhere.
Probably. And I mean, what I do in my books, Pat, is I sort of use Edinburgh as a microcosm for things that are happening in other places. And, this might not be happening in Edinburgh at the moment, but the potential for it to happen is certainly there, and it is happening in other places.
Now, bending the rules, that is John Rebus' middle name, almost. So he has bent the rules in the past. Now that he's a private citizen, he can bend what he likes. But still, the past might come back to haunt him in this particular situation.
Yeah, I mean, the setup here is that a police officer, as you've said, has been charged with domestic abuse. And he says, look, can we do a deal here? I'll lift the lid off the corruption, the endemic corruption in my police station, which has gone on for decades unchecked, if we can do a deal. And one of the names that he mentions from the past, the recent past, is John Rebus. So that pulls Rebus into this story. And you've got that big moral question about how far across the line are you willing to go to get what you think is the right result for society?
Yeah,
How maverick are you willing to be?
That's the central question.
That is the central question of this book, I think, is the central question, I think, is how far are we, members of the public, willing to put up with that? Yeah. Do you remember that TV show years ago? It was on the BBC, Life on Mars, and it was about a kind of contemporary, politically correct, left-leaning cop who ends up going back in time to the '70s and meets these boors and these sexist boors who run this police station, led by a guy called Gene Hunt, a character called Gene Hunt. I think we were all supposed to side with the touchy-feely modern cop. We didn't. We sided with the cops who were
got
slapping
the job done.
They were slapping around the suspects. There was a bottle of whiskey in the bottom drawer of the office. They were all smoking and swearing. They were sexist boors. They, as you say, they got the job done.
This was the kind of breaking eggs to make omelets kind of policing.
It sort of was. And I mean, Rebus has always had that way of doing things. The thing is, in the past, you could get away with a lot of this because it was done behind locked doors. Now, when everybody carries a mobile phone with them, the CCTV everywhere, we've got citizen journalists everywhere on the internet. It's not as easy for police to get away with the things they used to get away with. So in this book, Nemesis comes knocking on Rebus's door.
And I don't know how much you want to give away of how deep the trouble he gets into.
Well, I mean, but the book opens with him in court. I mean, so there's no surprises there. He's on trial. We don't know what he's on trial for, but it's pretty serious. The trial has taken place during a time of COVID. And we then go back in time to the events leading up to this.
Now, the important element in any trial, if it's a trial by jury, is the jury. Now, what gave you an insight into how that might work?
Well, I do assiduous amounts of research. And in this case, what I did was ask my son, because my son had just served jury service in Edinburgh during COVID. And he said he couldn't tell me about the case, obviously, but he said it was extraordinary because the jury, were in a cinema. In central Edinburgh, and there were all these video screens and cameras everywhere, and the only people in the actual courtroom were the professionals and the accused. And I just thought, I've never seen that before. I've never seen it in a book. I've never seen it on TV or film. That's a very different kind of courtroom drama. So I thought, I'm going to set the book during COVID just so I can bring that in.
Yeah. So it wasn't that you had to use COVID, because if it wasn't for that element, you know, mask wearing, whatever other bits of COVID and the remnants of COVID, you could have avoided.
It was a big question for me right at the start was, do I mention it? Do we want to forget about COVID? Is it set during the time of COVID? And then I walked into a pub in Edinburgh post-COVID, as things were unlocking, and I met a guy I know called Charlie, and he had this lanyard on with a little card at the end of it. I said, what's that? He said, oh, it tells people I've got COPD, therefore I don't have to wear a mask indoors.
Which, of course, Rebus has one of these too.
Absolutely. So I thought, well, hang on, my guy, Rebus, has COPD, so therefore he would have a professional-looking lanyard, which he could use to try and inveigle his way past crime scene tape and get into the scene of the crime. And he tries it in the book, but of course it doesn't work.
Yeah. He also kind of rejoices in not having to wear a mask.
I think he does. I mean, yeah. I think he is, as we've said already, he is one of those old-fashioned mavericks. So whatever you tell him to do, he'll do the opposite.
Yeah. Now, the book is vintage, Rebus, absolutely great. Will there be more? I mean, when you have a man with COPD who's retired and, you know, all these privations he's putting up with, is he long for this world?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've never known if there's going to be another book along until it comes, until the story knocks on my door. So hopefully I do have a contract to write one more book, but it doesn't need to be a Rebus novel. But I feel that there's still some unfinished business. You'll know this without spoiling it for anybody. There's a cliffhanger at the end of this book. So I kind of feel we do need to tidy that up. So hopefully, if the good Lord spares me. Won't be next year though, Pat, because my wife has said, look, Ian, you've been working far too hard. It's time that we took some time off. So on next year, it's either a year off or divorce. And I've known my wife for a long, long time. So I'm going to have
the
year
off. You've got to stick by her then.
I'm going to stick by her. But what happens when you get an idea, Pat? What happens if I'm on holiday somewhere nice and I just get an idea?
And do you have to write it down, or can it stew in your brain?
It can. I'll forget it. I mean, I always think that. I get a great idea at bedtime. I'll remember that in the morning. I never do when I wake up.
So you'll be lying on a sun lounger somewhere with your phone in your hand.
Yep.
Your wife is buried in a book and you're muttering into the phone.
Typing a note in. I'll say to her, oh, I'm just doing Twitter. I'm just doing Twitter, dear. And I'll be typing the idea for the next book into my... And that's how this book came about. This book came about because we were on holiday, January this year. I was panicking because I had a deadline. And suddenly the book came to me and I typed notes to myself into my phone, went back to Edinburgh and wrote the book.
We played a little clip at the beginning of the programme of you saying it's difficult to book a year because you spent half the year promoing the previous year's book and you're trying to write next year's book. It's difficult, but you're breaking that cycle.
Well, I've gone from writing, I used to write a couple of books a year when I was skint, Now I write a book every 2 years, if I'm lucky, because the ideas are definitely slowing down. During COVID, I escaped from COVID by sitting in my room in Edinburgh writing, and I wrote four times as much as I would normally write because there was no travelling, there was no touring. So if I could take next year off, hopefully I can recharge the batteries and come back fresh as a daisy with a new novel in what would be 2024.
Would you ever go back in time with Rebus, go back to his earlier years?
I've always said I wouldn't do that because it would be historical fiction. But in fact, recently I finished a book started by a Glasgow crime writer, and it was set in 1972, and I really enjoyed it. No CCTV, no mobile phones, no DNA analysis, nice, simple, old-fashioned policing. So never say never.
Never say never. A final point here from Des. He says, my favourite is The Lie Factory, written to weave in the lyrics of Rory Gallagher's songs, a wonderful homage to Ian's great affection for the guitar legend. I'd be interested to hear how he crafted that story.
This was, Rory Gallagher's brother Donal is keeping the flame alive, and he contacted me and he said, Ian, did you know that Rory was a huge fan of American pop fiction, kind of crime fiction? I went, no, I had no idea. He said, yeah, he'd take a guitar case full of books with him on tour. So he said, I'm going to put together an album of songs that reference crime stories and what have you. And he got me to write a story. So I wrote a pulpy 1930s based American detective story. And I tried to sneak in as many Rory Gallagher lyrics as I possibly could.
Greatly enjoyed by Des, and I must chase it up myself. But the current book is called I've got to read out the blurb at the front page. It is called A Heart Full of Headstones. It's published by Orion, and it's prolific author, Ian Rankin. Ian, thank you very much for joining us in studio.
Thank you.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.